At battle's end, speak the liturgy in a clear voice. Respect the bravery of the living. Give the rite of passage to the fallen. Honor the battle gear of the dead. To do all this with reverence, even when exhausted by battle and weary from the field, is the duty of a chaplain. It is his burden and satisfaction.
Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. This is episode 53. It is September 10th, 2019. It is Tuesday. I'm starting to think that just with my changes in my personal life stuff and whatnot, I'm going to possibly consider just making Tuesday more the permanent scheduled time frame. It's just, well, admittedly, some of it's just been random stuff that's been happening lately that's caused mild delays here and there. I actually was going to record earlier today too, but when I woke up to a very loud, nasty thunderstorm, that kind of caused a delay this morning. But you know, I was like, yeah, well, once it's all cleared and we're all good, we'll get to it. So, like I said, it's another mild delay. I'm actually just as frustrated as I'm sure anybody else might be, to some degree. Yesterday I was trying to get some other stuff done that I hadn't done before was the problem. So, hobby related, but still, it kind of put me off just a little bit there, but as far as going on in my neck of the woods, once again, just random family, emergency crap and stuff over the weekend. So, that, you know, added some extra layers of stress and intrigue, to everything. So, missed work actually on Sunday night even due to some of it. So yay, fun times. But, been trying to get caught up on hobbying stuff. I've been working on building up Warcry things. My goal is to have my warband at least assembled so I can, do my first round of the league stuff this, weekend. But I also have an Age of Sigmar tournament on Saturday, and there's also the 40K league. I have to get 3 games in within the 5-week time frame. If I don't get any of those games in this weekend, I'm going to need to do 3 games, on the last possible weekend. So it's going to be a little touch and go here, but, overall we'll see. You know, real life stuff tends to get in the way of, hobby stuff, but yeah, and one would say, well, that's being an adult, and, yep, I'm aware and it sucks. But it is what it is, you know, so still got to do those obligations and stuff for that. You might notice, too, as you're listening, I developed, I was fine, but this morning I slept for about an hour and then woke myself up coughing and hacking really bad, and now I'm really super stuffy, so yay. Krista's fairly certain that she's been getting sick, too, and stuff, so it's that time of the year again. During the summer, I was surprised how much I was sick, but yeah, it is that time of the year where it's going to be more prevalent. So joyous rapture, and children going back to school means them bringing fun nurgly diseases back with them. So, like I said, I've been trying to work on getting some hobby stuff done, get my Warcry warband ready for the league thing, getting terrain done so that, Krista and I can play at home. And also, you know, use that for both AOS and Warcry. So, she's still uncertain if she's going to do the tournament this Saturday. I think she should, just regardless, just say, fuck it, do it live. She's all super nervous. Well, I haven't practiced enough, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not the fucking point. When I started that whole 40K league in the first place, I was madly out of practice, but I just was like, fuck it, I'm gonna do it. So, and I did, and it was great. So, but to each their own as far as that goes. So, but yeah, beyond that, not a whole lot of specific happenings going on in my neck of the woods. As far as today's episode goes, gonna be talking quite a bit about Space Marine stuff, both the new codex as well as some of the supplementary stuff, previews, etc. I'm not gonna deep dive on each thing specifically, as that would be like a massively long episode. But I just want to hit on a few key points of my, personal thoughts and stuff on on the new codex and such. So, but first, of course, we'll go into the preview stuff. All right, so. First of all, as you know, I talked about, I think on last week's episode with the upcoming pre-orders, there was there is the Monsters and Mercenaries expansion for Warcry currently available for pre-order, as well as a bunch of the extra stuff, the Defiled Ruins, Untamed Beasts, Iron Golems, and Chaotic Beasts are all available for pre-order. They also have the Chimera model with data cards that are usable for that. And then the Monsters and Mercenaries expansion book itself, which adds a ton of like heroes and such available. So you'll be able to like ally in a bunch of the current line of heroes and whatnot from Age of Sigmar, which is kind of cool. So, a little worried. I've heard some people concerned, and I am myself. I will reserve judgment until I see it. But a little concerned that Warcry is already on the path to the kill team bloat, in those regards. I do personally highly agree with expansion content and new content being added in to the games and stuff. But putting it out so fast for starters, but also putting out things that completely change the feel and core mechanics of the game. You want something to actually change the mechanics to a degree, but if it becomes like a completely different game altogether, then it's kind of like eh. So we'll see. Once again, I'll reserve judgment for that. But once we do have that, I will kind of give you a rundown on my feelings once I can actually get my hands on the rules themselves. They also have pre-orders going on for in Barnes and Noble stores. Well, I don't know if it's available for pre-order, if you could just buy it. It doesn't really specify, it just says order online. But Barnes and Noble exclusives, they have three board games, Combat Arena, Dreadfane, and Storm Vault. Combat Arena has the models that are in the Blackstone Fortress Escalation expansion, so it's another way to access those. But if you're more interested in the board game side of what Games Workshop offers, check out Barnes and Noble. You can take a look there. My feelings on this whole exclusivity thing are, well, I hate exclusivity in general. I just generally don't find that it helps anybody. It just makes it more difficult to get products to people. So yeah. Now, admittedly, in this modern age where you can order things online, if somebody has something exclusive, it's usually not a big deal, because even if it's not easy access for you to just roll into a place that has it, you can still order it. But it's still just the fact that it's really just takes away choices from the consumer. So I just personally am not a big fan of exclusivity bullshit, but that is what it is. Now, the other thing they also are doing pre-orders on right now is the Gotrek model, which I'm going to go into further detail. They actually showed off his War Scroll But we'll talk about that after the rest of the previews here, because I want to go a little bit more in depth there. But it's a fantastic model. I believe it's $35, and when we you'll see what I mean when we get to the War Scroll section. It is fucking insane. So, but let's continue on with the preview stuff here first. There's not much else here until we get to the main core topics. And, Gotrek and stuff. But anyway, they did announce the initial book for Psychic Awakening. The part one is going to be called Phoenix Rising. Looks like it's going to be focused on the Eldari. There actually is a website that's got an interactive map. So every time they come up with a new thing, there'll be a new icon placed on the map of the Sundered Galaxy there. But yeah, Eldari seems to be the first part, and they have shown off some of the new models and, rules for Psychic Awakening. Once again, it's just a little, short little preview, but they did show off a new Howling Banshee Exarch, plastic, obviously. And it looks like you'll be able to build it in at least, a couple different configurations. There is one wearing the Banshee Mask helmet and one without. There's also one with the dual swords. Admittedly, I don't entirely remember the names right off the top of my head of the different Banshee weapons. But yeah, it's got like dual swords for one build, and the other has like a spear instead. I will say it is a nice looking model. But if I was to build it, I don't think I'd go with the non-helmeted option. It just looks a little funny to me. Namely, because it still has that giant mane of hair coming off of it. But it basically looks like a top knot that went awry. It doesn't look good, in my opinion, without the mask. So that's just my two cents, on that. Just my personal opinion. I don't think it's a bad sculpt, like poorly made. I just think it was a weird aesthetics decision. I guess I just always kind of thought of the hair on the Banshee masks, like coming out the back, as part of the mask itself and not part of some really weird crazy volume top knot, which is what it's shown as without the mask. So it just looks a little funky. The head, the way they have this painted up, basically head looks like it's sitting on a weird trash bag tied with red ribbon that's just pushed up against the back of it and is massively poofy. So but yeah, they did show off some of the rules that Psychic Awakening will be adding. They have, for starters, a rule called Piercing Strike. Oh, I see that it's got a name. It says Executioner, so I would guess that's the spear. Once again, forgive me, my Eldari lore is not the strongest. Piercing Strike, when this unit is chosen to fight with a Howling Banshee Exarch in this unit that is equipped with an Executioner, can make a Piercing Strike. If they do until the end of the phase, subtract 1 from the attack's characteristic and add 3 to the strength characteristic of that Exarch, and the Executioner itself has a damage characteristic of 3. So, you basically trade off a number of attacks for far more powerful attacks. Now, I don't know what their base strength is. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that it's probably 4 or 5. Adding bonuses to strength usually isn't a big deal. But adding 3 to your strength actually can be quite defining. If it's a 4 by default, adding 3 brings up to 7. So that means that you're normally wounding most tanks and stuff, and like tougher creatures and characters, usually, wounding them on 4s. If it brings up to 8, then you're typically, from 5, then you're typically wounding on 3s for even the more powerful things. So you could go toe-to-toe with a knight and do a little bit of damage even. And then, yeah, especially with that damage characteristic of 3, that definitely adds a little bit more oomph. There is a stratagem called Exemplar of the Banshee Shrine. You can use the stratagem for before the battle for 1 CP. Apparently the Howling Banshee Exarchs are going to have power list. I'm going to guess it's going to kind of be similar to the way like chaplains work and stuff. But you can take that ability in addition to the War Shout ability instead of replacing it. So they have one ability, War Shout, by default, but you can replace it, or you can spend the CP and you get both. So that's nice to have that little bit of extra flexibility. So, it actually has this note, too. I just see it does specify here that the maskless version is for when you're running as Inari, since apparently they just don't like masks. So, which I do understand from, like, with the way the Path of the Eldar works. That you wear these war masks basically to indulge in your violent tendencies while separating your soul and self from them. So, whereas apparently the Inari don't give a flying fuck. So, yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, moving on here. They did also over the weekend show off some more stuff for the Ossiarch Bone Reapers for Age of Sigmar. So, they showed off two new model sets. One is the Immortus Guard. I've been looking at them. They look like they're probably alternate builds in the same kit as those guys that they first showed off with the forearms with the multiple swords. These guys instead of having like the multi-face with the multiple swords, they've got one solid face that's kind of got like a samurai-style helmet. They have a shield in one pair of arms, and then they have a halberd of a sorts in the other pair of arms. So they look pretty cool. Once again, admittedly, those particular models are probably, in my mind, some of the weaker ones in the line, the multi-arm dudes. But even then, I think they're really nice models overall. But the big one is the Gothazar Harvester that they showed off. Now, this thing's had a bit of a mixed reaction from what I've seen online. And even myself, I have some personal mixed reactions with it. But there's a lot of things I love about it, too. So, personally, I think it's actually a really badass model. It looks like it's got some variation for building it up and stuff. It's got different weapon types. They can either... Basically, it's like this big, giant, hunchback, hulking thing that is made out of bones and bloody organs and all sorts of crap, like a giant bone slash flesh golem type thing, which is really badass looking. But yeah, there's some stuff that's just you can alternate build aesthetically, like different head options and stuff. But yeah, it does look like it has different weapons options. There's one that shows like a mace ball, like a spiked, big giant spiked crushing mace sort of thing. And then it's also a build that has hooks for hands instead. Big, giant hooks, I might add, too. Yeah, he's pretty cool looking. What's kind of cool with him, too, is on his back, he's basically got this corpse cart, essentially, sort of aspect, where his whole thing is going around the battlefield and picking up body parts and storing them in his back so they could bring them back to build new warriors out of, which is kind of cool. That being said, the weird parts aesthetically, for starters, is that he's got really short, tiny legs. He's got a similar stance to like a Carnifex in a lot of ways, but he's got these really tiny, skinny little legs relative to the rest of his body. It just looks a little too much out of proportion. I kind of get the effect a little bit, but given how gigantic his like ass end is and stuff, it seems like a little much to go with such stubby looking legs. It could just be the angle of the pictures though, because in some of the pictures it doesn't look as bad, so it's hard to say entirely. The other thing that's had the internet having a gay old time with this whole thing is that he does indeed have some poor bastard as his jockstrap, basically. Yes, that's right. There is a upper torso and arms, as well as a face, where his dick should be. So, yeah, somebody somewhere pissed off somebody before they died, and now they are being repurposed as this guy's athletic cup. So, yeah, it's just kind of weird. I don't know if somebody wasn't thinking, or if it was done with intent, or what the deal is, but maybe giving this guy a giant boner was not the right move. So, beyond that, it looks cool, because it even shows him, like, picking up this really mangled, dismembered arm and shit. You know, but otherwise, he's just got this really dumb grin on his face, torso hanging down, and he's just like, yep, I'm this guy's penis. Yay. It's weird. But overall, like I said, I really like the model. I'm greatly looking forward to seeing more of these guys. Really hoping to get my hands on rules and models, even in the not-too-distant future, because these guys are badass looking. So, but yeah, there are some more preview type stuff, but I want to kind of tie that into our Space Marines discussion. So we will discuss that in a bit. I'm going to take a quick little break here. After the break, we will come back and talk about that Gotrek model as well as those previews. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Regimental Vox. Follow the Regimental Vox on social media by going to facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast or on Twitter @RegimentalVox. Like what you're hearing? You can help support the show for as little as $1 a month by going to patreon.com/theRegimentalVox today. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Regimental Vox. As I mentioned before the break, I wanted to go more in depth on the new Gotrek model. So they did release his war scroll and stuff. He is just a fucking, like, just absolute nut puncher. He's just insane. He is an order hero. He has the keywords order, Dwarden hero, and Gotrek Gurnison. Big shock that he's got his name in the keywords. And yeah, he can be a part of the Order Grand Alliance. However, if you add him in, you can't include any other allies in your army. He is your sole ally. So keep that in mind if you're considering him. And he also can be included in a pitched battle or meeting engagement army, even if his points cost exceeds the amount allowed for allied units. I think normally you're limited to having a quarter of your army taken up by allies, if I recall correctly. That's going to be hard with this guy, because he is 520 points. Yes, 520 fucking points. It is nuts. But he's got rules to match how expensive he is, so let's get into it here. So for starters, as far as his base stats, he has 8 wounds with a 4-inch move. So as expected with, Dwarden, he's not exactly cruising across the field by default. Bravery stat of 10 with a 4-up save. Okay, not bad. Not crazy, but not bad. All right, so you're wondering, all right, well, where's the crazy parts coming in? Okay, well, let's take the next step here. Let's take a look at his weapons. He's armed with Zangrim Thaz. It's got a 1-inch range. It attacks 6 times. It's a 3-up to hit, 3-up to wound. Rend, neg 2. Damage, 3. Wow. Okay, so for starters, you're looking at some pretty high odds of hitting and wounding. You're going to tear through a lot of people's armor. Outside of going up against the spooky boys, he's just going to rip a new asshole in everything that comes near him. And he's going to do 3 damage when he does. So, yeah, with the 6 attacks, you're looking at typically against, I mean, at least in my experience, a lot of models don't have better than a 4-up save throughout the game. So he's typically going to knock him down to 6s at best. Yeah, he's just gonna tear holes through everything. So, alright, pretty good, pretty good. But is he 520 points worth of good? Well, let's continue. For starters, in his abilities, he has the Avatar of Grimnir. If the damage inflicted by an attack, spell, or ability that targets or affects this model is greater than 1, change it to 1. In addition, if a spell or ability would slay this model suffers 1 mortal wound instead. However, if this model is included in your army, it cannot be set up in reserve, it must be set up on the battlefield, and you cannot use spells or abilities on this model that will allow you to set it up again after the battle has begun. Okay, so, basically what you're looking at is, let's say somebody hits you with some nasty fucking thing that does like D6 damage, you know, and they roll hot and they get a 6. Well, too fucking bad. It's 1 damage. Doesn't matter. So somebody has to hit you and hit and wound and make you fail armor save 8 times consecutively in order to kill him. Yes, you heard me. They have to do it 8 fucking times. They can't just, you know, so if anything, laying into him with more powerful units that do less attacks is not going to work as well as swarming the shit out of him with hordes that can just keep piling the shit on, and, you know, just because, you know, they're all going to be just be the damage 1. You want to force him to fail saves through having to roll a bunch of saves. You have to do more volume, less power. What's crazy is that it doesn't just lower it by 1 wound or whatever. It literally says, oh, damage 100, too bad, it's damage 1, you know, or whatever. So that's pretty crazy. And then, yeah, if you have an ability that would normally just be like, oh, slay a character, you know, or slay a model that you target. No, it just does the one wound. That's it. 1 mortal wound. So now if it's his last wound, it's going to kill him because, well, it doesn't matter. Then he gets 1 mortal wound. That wound goes away. Boom, he's dead. Now you can't, you know, you can't set it up in reserve. You can't use spells or abilities that would allow you to move it, you know, set it up again. Which is, you know, whatever. You know, I'm not entirely certain what, I mean, I kind of get it from a lore perspective that he just likes charging into battle and shit. Not entirely certain where the major downside is to that rules-wise. I mean, I guess it means you have a little less flexibility with him if your army normally has some flexibility in those regards. But, eh, you know, compared to what he's capable of. I guess the one thing I would say is that, you know, as an area denial model, your opponent may just try to kite around and dance around him instead of getting near him, which I wouldn't blame them for. And you can't use stuff to, you know, move him to the other side of the battlefield or whatever if you wanted to. So, yeah, pretty badass. You know, I would say, all right, yeah, 520 points. Okay, there's some stuff going on here, I guess. But is he really worth 520 points? Oh, there, yeah, he's got some stuff still. Let's see here. The next step, Krag Blackhammer's Master Rune. You can reroll hit and wound rolls for attacks made by this model. In addition, if the unmodified hit roll for an attack made by this model is 6, that attack inflicts D6 mortal wounds on the target in addition to any normal damage. Holy shit. Okay, so you're rolling 6 attacks. You know, failed a couple. You know, you got a couple 1s and 2s. All right, reroll that shit. Oh, look, you got a couple 6s there, too. Boom. So now you get to do D6 mortal wounds per each 6. In addition to continuing to roll them forward to roll on the wounds. Oh, I failed a bunch of wounds, 1s and 2s. Roll again anyways. That's just absolutely nuts. So in theory, once again, this is like if you know, rolled magic loaded dice or something like that. If you roll 6 attacks and you get 6 sixes in total after rerolls and stuff for your hits, you could do up to 36 damage with that, you know, D6 mortal wounds per each of those attacks. And then you get to proceed to roll the wound and do an extra 3 damage apiece for all the successful ones. So in theory, he could do 36 mortal wounds, plus up to 18 more damage on top of that. So 54 potential damage in total that he can dish out in one round. Okay, that's pretty nuts. Now, mind you, that's obviously at the top end of really, really ridiculously good dice rolling. You're probably not going to do that, but it can happen. And when it does, your opponent is going to just say fuck it and walk away from the table. That is just bullshit levels of insanity. Yeah, man, that's really fucking crazy. There's no, you know, for 520 points, yeah, sure, maybe he's worth that then, I guess. You know, I'm glad, you know, if you're up against him, you should be glad that that's all he's got. Oh, but wait, there's more. We've got Unstoppable Battle Fury. At the end of the combat phase, if this model is within 3 inches of an enemy unit, this model can fight again. So, yeah, you can do all that shit again. Now, admittedly, I don't know. It says this model can fight again at the end of, you know, at the end of the combat phase if it's within 3 inches of an enemy unit. Now, I don't know if this means he has infinite fight phase, basically, like infinite fighting. If there's always, you know, if you manage to slay a bunch of shit and you still have an enemy unit within 3 inches, if he gets to go again, and then if after that there's, you know, enemies again within 3 inches, he gets to go again. I don't know if it just keeps going. It does, for the lore part of the rule, it does say, a relentless fury that abates only when all opponents lie slain, so maybe that's possible. Now, a smart opponent is not going to let you keep models within 3 inches of that, of him. You know, they're going to, when you kill a bunch of their shit, they're going to take the stuff that's within 3 inches of him to make sure he can't just pile in again. And, because that's going to be part of the problem, too, is that each time he gets to fight again, he's going to pile in, and he's going to go mowing through shit, and then he's going to pile in again, if he can. So, once again, I don't know if that's, you know, rules as written. It's an infinite amount of fight, you know, an infinite amount of times to fight in each combat phase, as long as there's something within 3 inches of him. That is just nuts. But even if it was, did say you get to fight again once and once only, once again, you can do up to 54 attacks in that, 54 damage potential in one round. Now you're talking, even if you said he only gets to fight one more time, that's it, just once, that's another 54 potential damage. It's 108 potential damage in one fucking round of combat. You know, that's like, holy fuck. You know, that's just nuts. That definitely makes him worth the 520 points, you know. But yet, there's still more rules. The last thing, and it is the last thing, I promise this time. The shoulder plate of Adassa. Roll a dice each time you allocate a wound or mortal wound to this model. On a 3+, that wound or mortal wound is negated. So not only does he have a 4+ save by default, but even if somebody runs through his saves, or, you know, he just fails his save rolls, he still gets to negate wounds on a 3+. That's pretty intense shit. So, yeah, 520 points, so he is not cheap, this is true. But god damn, is he ever just a fucking beast and a half. It's hard to say entirely, you know, because it does mention pitch battle, meeting engagement, and stuff. So this means he's technically tournament legal. Now, his points definitely make him very, very difficult to want to put into a tournament setting, just because he's going to take up a huge chunk of your list in one model. Which is dangerous, you know, once again, because he's not invincible. He's pretty fucking close to invincible, but he's not invincible. They did do a little article where they had it basically, like, roll off against a bunch of different particular fight setups. And in every single one of these, he did win. There were some that were close. When he went up against four greater demons at the same time. And he did manage to come out on top. He went up against one of each greater demon type in one go. But he did end up winning, but with only one wound left. So, I mean, yeah. But still, he did that. He beat the snot out of Nagash in this article. Archaon, they even threw just a bunch of grots, once again, going for that volume thing. And actually, they did quite a decent amount of damage. You know, the grots actually did a little bit more so, it seemed, than anybody else. In the long run, he still had more wounds than when he went up against, like, the greater demons. But the point being is that they were able to do a lot more damage in one round just because they were swarming him with so many attacks. So, it's a pretty crazy, beastly amount of power that this guy contains. 520 points, he definitely seems, you know, like he should be that expensive, if not even more so, possibly. Until I actually see him in a game, I will reserve that judgment. But, you know, and also, too, it does kind of depend on how that Unstoppable Battle Fury, if it is indeed infinite, that's holy shit. But once again, a wily opponent will not let you do that. A wily opponent will not, you know, keep you within 3 inches of them at all times. Because otherwise, he's just going to keep rolling and keep rolling and keep rolling until he mows through your entire army. Which isn't good. So, but yeah, like I said, pretty fucking crazy model. And it's a beautiful model on top of that. But even more nuts is his rules. And that's just insane. So, but let's go ahead and take another quick break here. After the break, we'll be going over the new Codex Space Marines as well as some of the supplement stuff. Once again, not going to be a super deep dive, just going to go into a few specific points and go from there. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Regimental Vox. Follow the Regimental Vox on social media by going to facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast or on Twitter @RegimentalVox. Like what you're hearing? You can help support the show for as little as $1 a month by going to patreon.com/theRegimentalVox today. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Regimental Vox. As I mentioned before the break there, wanted to go over some of the specifics on the new Codex Space Marines. And so, guess what we're going to do? We're going to discuss Codex Space Marines. Now, the FAQ is out now, you know, making a few slight adjustments and a few clarifications on things. And there's some very interesting stuff going on overall with all this stuff. So before we get into the what is current, I wanted to go ahead and discuss a little bit of some of the stuff we've seen previewed so far. They've recently announced that they will be doing pre-orders. I think starting this weekend they're going to start pre-orders for the both the Codex Supplement Raven Guard and Codex Supplement Iron Hands. So, but yeah, so those will both be coming out here very shortly. Both of the, you know, actually, it's kind of interesting that they're doing both of those specific ones back-to-back just because their paint schemes are extremely similar to each other in many ways. But anywho, let's get into it. Now, mind you, these are obviously only previews, so we've only got a few little specific points of interest to discuss. Until we actually see the full things, it'll be hard to completely state how they are going to work, but we can at least get kind of a general thematic element to them. So, for starters, Iron Hands looks like they're, as you know, they are lore-wise and stuff, we're going to be looking at an army that is built to be very, very difficult to kill. It's just going to be something that really drags the battle out, that, you know, just toughs out pretty much anything. Very, very hard to kill. Now, for starters, they did show off in this preview, they have an ability, Calculated Fury, which it sounds like that's kind of like their one of their combat doctrine bonuses, because it has to be exclusively Iron Hands army, the whole thing. Calculated Fury, whilst the Devastator doctrine is active, models with this ability do not suffer the penalty for moving and firing heavy weapons. In addition, whilst the Devastator Doctrine is active, when resolving an attack made with a heavy weapon by a model with this ability, reroll a hit roll of 1. So, what you're looking at here, when you have the Devastator Doctrine, the default thing is that it improves the armor penetration characteristic of heavy and grenade weapons by 1. So, AP 0 becomes AP neg 1, etc., etc. So, you're still going to get that. And then you're not going to suffer the penalty for moving and firing heavy weapons. And you're also going to be able to reroll hit rolls of 1. Now, the reroll is nice, but you're most likely going to build your army in such a way that you'll have access to those rerolls of some sort anyways, generally speaking. But at least this way, if for some reason you've fallen out of, character bubble, or worse, if you've completely lost the character, you'll at least have a way to kind of get around that issue a little bit. So that's, it gives you a little bit of an extra oomph there to help out in that situation. So, and then, being able to do that without suffering the penalty for moving and firing heavy weapons just for being in the Devastator Doctrine. You don't have to do anything fancy or special or anything like that. That's pretty nice. It's a pretty nice little boost there. Then there's also this one I've actually found rather interesting. So there's going to be 6 Warlord traits unique to the Iron Hands chapter. There's one here that's very fascinating, a student of history. When this Warlord consolidates, they can move up to 6 inches instead of 3. Okay, that's pretty powerful. That's, not unusual, or at least not out of the realm of usual things. But it's definitely got some major potency. A lot of competitive players talk about how, you win in the movement phase. And it's not just the movement phase, though. It's you win through movement, I should say. So be it the way you charge, the way you advance, the way that you consolidate, etc. Anything that you can use to move and control the field, that is where the key to victory lies. So now you can move up to 6 inches just consolidating. All right, that's pretty crazy. This is the really fucking cool part, though. And they do not have to end this move closer to the nearest enemy model. So what this means is if your character's in a situation where consolidating, the typical consolidation would put them into more danger or would put them, a wily opponent will try to maneuver some of their models in such a way that when you go to consolidate, you're going to be forced to move towards the closest model. So he might consolidate you away from you might be forced to consolidate away from like a juicier target, or you'll have to forego consolidation so that you don't lose positioning. This basically says, well, fuck that, and just you do as you do. So that's really cool. You also have a whole slew. Each of these guys, basically, each of these chapters seems to be getting like their own fancy psychic powers, their own discipline. That was the word I was looking for. I was like, but yeah, so they got technomancy, which, sounds really cool. I don't think it's related to raves or anything like that, but I guess we'll see. But they did show off one of the abilities, Blessing of the Machine God. It has a warp charge value of 5. If manifested, select one friendly Iron Hands vehicle within 12 inches of the Psyker. And it does say you can only select a Titanic model if the result of the psychic test to manifest this power was 8 or more. Until the start of your next psychic phase, when resolving an attack made by that model, add 1 to the hit roll. Now, this definitely seems like something that'd be really useful, like on that new Repulsor Executioner and stuff, where you're going to, I mean, that thing costs a lot of points, so you want to try and maximize the amount of damage output that thing can do in during the battle. Plus two, since it's a larger target and is very valuable to you, etc., an opponent is going to probably try to knock it out as soon as possible. So your ability to add one to the hit rolls to maximize the amount of potential damage before he drops out of the battle is definitely a boon. Also, too, that can help you override any ballistic skill negative modifiers, be they shooting at Eldar flyers or because you've taken damage to your vehicle and you've dropped down in the brackets. So it's definitely got some nice features and functions to it. I'm hoping that the, you know, a whole psychic discipline isn't totally focused on just vehicle manipulation, but even if it is, I guess that gives you a reason to build a more vehicle-centric force. So, they also have access to relics, obviously, too, which they do have one called the Iron Stone that they showed off. And when resolving an attack made against an Iron Hands vehicle within 3 inches of a friendly model with this relic, reduce any damage inflicted by one to a minimum of one. So once again, kind of like what we were discussing with Gotrek earlier, being able to minimize the amount of damage that your enemy can do to you, you know, basically forcing them to waste their high-powered shots a little bit more, is a boon. Now, in this case, it only reduces it by one. It doesn't reduce it to one like Gotrek does there in AOS. That would be nuts. But still, it'll allow you to, you know, sort of mitigate those heavy-hitting weapons a little bit more. So, now, they also have, you know, other special issue war gear and relics. There's also some stratagems included, and they do show one off here of it's called Mnemonic Auto Savant for 2 CP. This is only usable if you're playing a battle with tactical objectives, but still, personally, I'm not a fan of Maelstrom missions because tactical objectives are just too fucking swingy, generally speaking. But use this stratagem at the end of the turn after achieving a tactical objective if an Iron Hands Warlord from your army is on the battlefield. Do not discard that tactical objective. At the start of the next turn, it is once again active. You can only use this stratagem if the mission you're playing uses tactical objectives. You can only use it once per battle. So basically, if you got something that gives you some easy points and you want to do it again, you know, be it holding an objective or something like that, boom, there you go. You can pop that strat, and that tactical objective is still good to rock and roll. You get the points for it this turn, and then you can continue to get it next turn. So that's pretty handy. I am curious. I would think of the way that it's worded and stuff, I'm assuming it basically means, yep, it was succeeded, and it's like you drew the same thing again. Because there's some of those tactical objectives, like for killing X amount of things in one turn, and if you kill a certain amount, you get like 1 point, but if you kill more, you get extra points. I would assume that it just basically treats it like it's a new, fresh tactical objective. So I don't think that you could say, oh, well, you know, I killed X amount of models this turn that apply, but it's not quite enough to reach that extra threshold, so I'll just pop this and hold it and it'll carry over, blah, blah, blah. I don't suspect that that's the way that's intended to work at all. But yeah, so some cool shit there. And then the Raven Guard. They've got some more, you know, stealthy-oriented type things. For starters, they've got the Surgical Strikes rule. While the tactical doctrine is active, when resolving an attack made by a model with this ability against a character unit, you can add one to hit rolls and wound rolls. So this is more for, like, assassination purposes, which, you know, makes sense. That's kind of their shtick, stealth and assassination type of crap. You're still going to get the AP boost to rapid fire and assault weapons. So that definitely is nice to have there. You know, especially when you're adding the one to hit and wound rolls. That definitely adds an extra oomph when you need to deal with, especially like up against like armies like Chaos and stuff, where there's a lot of character build stuff relying on those auras. It's going to give you a little bit of extra capability to deal with that shit sooner. Then Warlord trait-wise, they show off the Warlord trait Shadow Master. Enemy units cannot fire Overwatch at this Warlord, which is, okay, that's pretty cool. Admittedly, and this is something that's kind of weird with the way that GW has been handling the new codex. There's definitely a drive of theirs to make you stop using old Space Marines and focus purely on Primaris, but the Primaris Marines lack specific things. Now, the new codex does address some of the lacks, like transports and stuff like that, but it does not address the whole lack of dedicated assault units for Primaris. Now, you do have Reavers. Reavers are an option, but they're a mixed bag. I personally think that they're far better than people give them credit for, but I still don't think they are as great as what would be necessary, in my opinion, to make a good dedicated assault unit. Namely, in that it's frustrating that you've got Primaris with jump packs, but none of them are geared towards getting into combat, even though that's one of the main advantages to a jump pack, is being able to get up to grips with the enemy quicker. More quickly. But now, this whole Shadow Master thing, enemy units cannot fire Overwatch at this Warlord. Alright, cool. But generally speaking, you're not going to have a Warlord that has enough, you know, capability that's going to be good enough in combat to make it worthwhile to get him there and stuff. Unless you're doing, like, old school Space Marine with jump pack, you know. Now, that being said, they do have a relic available, the Raven's Fury. It's a jump pack model only thing. So, unless they've got, you know, some special rules that are going to let them have Primaris captains with jump packs now, I don't foresee this coming in super, like, let me rephrase this. If you are going Primaris only build, there's going to be a lot of this stuff that's not super useful. So, like I said, unless they are going to start permitting Primaris Marines to start using jump packs and doing all this other crap, unless I'm missing something here. But, anywho, this is pretty cool, though. Don't get me wrong. You know, if you're building like a pseudo Smash Captain sort of dealio, this still has some oomph to it. Jump pack model only. A model from your army with this relic can be chosen to charge with even if they advance this turn. So you can move, you can advance, you can charge. Cool. When a charge roll is made for that model, you can reroll the dice. Even better. In addition, after that model finishes a charge move, you can select one enemy unit within 1 inch of that model and roll a d6. On a 4+, that enemy unit suffers one mortal wound. Okay, that's not bad. It's not great. That last bonus there is just kind of like, okay, one random wound on a 4+. Okay, that's not bad, but it's not going to, generally speaking, you know, blow anybody's socks off since it's one potential mortal wound. 50% chance of just one wound. But once again, you know, if you're doing that Primaris only build, that's kind of limiting. So, okay, to some degree, I guess it's kind of a good thing to, you know, because a lot of us have been complaining that they are completely phasing out old Space Marines. Essentially, they're letting you use them, but they're not giving you a good reason to use them. This army so far does seem to give you some reasons why. But that being said, personally, I'm more interested in building an all Primaris build anyways. I just wish that it had a few more things to fill in some of those odd gaps here and there. But let's move on here. They also talk about how they have their own psychic discipline, Umbramancy, so Shadowmancy, basically. They do show off one ability here, Shadow Step. It's got a warp charge value of 7. If manifested, select one Raven Guard character from your army within 18 inches of the Psyker. Remove that unit from the battlefield and set it up anywhere on the battlefield that's more than 9 inches from any enemy models. So it's basically the jump, but only affects characters. Now, they in the article, they mention, you know, you can withdraw a vulnerable character or, you know, if you need to move somebody for aura purposes. Okay, yep, those are good reasons. But going back to, like, the Raven's Fury thing, you can, you know, take a dude who was on one side of the field and just beating the snot out of some people over there, but now you need him on the other side of the field to go beat the snot out of somebody else. You can, whoosh, you know, just straight up pick him up and drop him elsewhere, so, which is nice. And then lastly, they do have a stratagem, False Flight, that they showed off. And this is a 2CP stratagem. You can use this stratagem when a Raven Guard unit from your army falls back. That unit can shoot and charge in this turn. Now, some people have pointed out that the stratagem actually isn't that great in terms of it being special to the Raven Guard, namely because the Ultramarines Codex supplement has a stratagem different wording. But if you break down the wording, I'm looking at it right now even. I do not personally see the difference here. If anything, it's almost like the Ultramarines one is more useful. So, once again, the Raven Guard stratagem, 2CP, choose a Raven Guard unit that falls back. That unit can shoot in charge of his turn. The Ultramarines one is called Fall Back and Re-Engage. Use a stratagem when an Ultramarines unit from your army falls back. The stratagem costs 1 CP if that unit has the Codex Discipline Chapter Tactic. Otherwise, it costs 2 CP. That unit can shoot and charge this turn. If that unit has the Codex Discipline Chapter Tactic, the hit roll penalty from that tactic for falling back and shooting does not apply to that unit this turn. So, basically, the way I'm reading this, and I could be mistaken, because there's some confusion with this whole, the way these things work with the successor chapters and all that bullshit. But I don't even know why it's worded that way, because I don't know where, I mean, I guess if you were, I don't know, it, because it's not a combat doctrine related thing. If you had an Ultramarines army or even a successor army and you use the Inheritors of the Primarch for your chapter tactic, you still technically get the Codex Discipline chapter tactic. Now, it may be one of those things where, oh, you're the Inheritor of the Primarch, so you do get to use that same ability, the Codex Discipline thing, but you don't count as having Codex Discipline. You count as having Inheritor of the Primarch. Ultramarines. Okay, maybe that's how that's designed to work. But even then, that is 2 CP, which is the same as False Flight. And you can still shoot and charge in the same turn. And then you do not get a hit roll penalty then. It's the same thing. It's just the Ultramarines one is massively worded, really funky, and generally speaking, is going to be cheaper. So I just don't think that, I find it really weird, at least so far, that the Raven Guard preview, it honestly leaves me feeling quite underwhelmed thus far. So there was some word and rumors before that Raven Guard were going to be like the first thing and that they were going to be absolutely nuts and it was just going to be the craziest shit ever. Looking at it, I mean, this preview doesn't show off as much as the Iron Hands one for starters. And what it does show off just does not mega impress the shit out of me. There's some cool stuff here, but it's going to require very specific builds to use. That's going to kind of require you to use less Primaris stuff even too to maximize your options. Once again, until we see the full supplement, it's hard to say entirely. But this False Flight stratagem, I don't know why it's why it is the way it is, you know, like why the Ultramarines one has such complicated wording to it. You know, why would you, if they don't have Codex Discipline, they wouldn't have Codex Discipline because they're not Ultramarines, and if they're not Ultramarines, then they don't have access to the Ultramarine stratagems. You know, like, that doesn't make sense, the way that's written and worded. You know, unless I'm missing something from, like, the FAQ, that, you know, but there's, I don't see anything here in the FAQ even that really specifies, you know, like, yeah, it's just like I said, it's fucking weird. Now, if you're a successor chapter, the way that the stratagems work in the supplements is you count as having that the correct keyword, you know. So if you are, you know, a successor chapter of the Ultramarines, then when you're using Ultramarine stratagems, you count as keyword Ultramarines then. It does not replace the keyword with whatever your chapter is. It counts as Ultramarines keyword. So, it, like I said, it's a very complicated wording that I honestly don't see what its point or purpose is, unless I'm not understanding something there. I do know that if your army is not fully comprised, top to bottom, mono faction and mono chapter, that you don't get access to, like, the combat doctrines and stuff. But as far as I can tell, you still would count as having Codex Discipline in the case of an Ultramarines army. You know, if you had a detachment of Ultramarines and then you had a detachment of Guard or some shit, your Ultramarines would still be able to use that stratagem and still count as having Codex Discipline. So, what the fuck? And if you're a successor chapter, you still count as Ultramarines keyword. And so you'd have access to the stratagem. But also, too, if you're a successor, you technically have Codex Discipline. So it's, like I said, it's weird. And but that even still, that still makes it 2 CP. That just puts it on equal footing with False Flight. So, you know, if you think that you have a different interpretation, a different understanding, where, you know, why these two are actually different, you know, hit up the Facebook page, comment, message me, whatever. Feel free. You know, I would like to know the answer to this, because this just seems really weirdly worded. The Raven Guard one is simply worded, but why is the Ultramarines one so complicated when they don't seem to do anything different, even when you throw in the complication? It just seems like extra unnecessary steps. So, it's just strange. Overall, so, but I'm still excited to, you know, find out and see more. So hopefully we'll know soon. I'm hoping I can get my hands on those, supplements soon. But, now as far as the Codex Space Marines itself goes, I kind of touched on it, earlier. You know, they talk about the Inheritors of the Primarch, and I talked about it on a previous episode too, talk about painting stuff. But there's been more questions being brought up and stuff, and I even commented on a Facebook group I'm a part of last night, being like, well, I don't see why you couldn't do some of these things. But I have found that, yeah, the wordings between supplements and codex and the main codex itself add some weird caveats and stuff here and there. So, and this is going to be, like, one of the main things I wanted to discuss about this new codex and stuff, is this whole Inheritors of the Primarch thing. So, basically, you've got your chapter, for starters. Let's just say, you know, successor chapter, you are, I don't know, Sons of Guillemin, you know, or some weird shit, or the Blue Man Group, the Super Smurfs. Whatever. You are a successor chapter of the Ultramarines. Okay, cool. So you've decided you want to be a successor chapter to the Ultramarines. Sounds good. So you go, you paint your chapter up. Let's say that they're a different shade of blue, and they've got a picture of Guillemin's butthole as their chapter logo instead of, you know, the Omega Horseshoe Ultramarines bullshit. Whatever. So you do all that. Now, according to the rules, since they are not painted like Ultramarines, they cannot be Ultramarines. Now, in previous iterations of books and stuff, it says, oh, you know, you pick one of these chapter tactics, or, you know, if you're not one of those chapters, you know, pick the one that closest matches your playstyle. Okay, that makes sense. That sounds good to me. You know, that way you can paint whatever you want, but you can count as these dudes. Sounds good. Now, the way the rules are written now, though, is that, at least with Codex Space Marines, there is no longer such a thing as counts as. You don't have, you know, Guillemin's Butthole chapter, and they count as Ultramarines. No, they are Guillemin's Buttholes, the inheritors of the Primarch, Ultramarines. Now, what this means in game terms is that you get access to the Codex Discipline chapter tactic. You get access, if you have the supplement, to all of the Ultramarine stratagems, Ultramarine's warlord traits, etc., etc., and Ultramarine special issue war gear. However, you do not have access to the Ultramarine's relics, which I was quite mind blown by when I saw that. Now, there is a stratagem you can play that is Honored by McCrag for 1 CP. Use a stratagem after nominating a model drawn from an Ultramarine successor chapter to be your warlord. You can give one relic of McCrag to a character model from your army that is drawn from an Ultramarine successor chapter instead of giving them a special issue war gear relic or a chapter relic from Codex Space Marine. If you do, replace the Ultramarines keyword in all instances on that relic, if any, with that model's chapter keyword. You can only use this stratagem once per battle. So, yeah, it's I find this rather fascinating. You know, I wasn't arguing. When I posted, commented last night, I wasn't arguing with the guy who had said something. I just was asking for, like, clarification. But then I found it myself. He might have replied, but Facebook's dumb sometimes. It doesn't notify you of that bullshit. It legitimately, you cannot. You can't just, you know, for example, let's see here. So we've got Relics of McCrag here. Let's say we've got the, so we've got this, Armor of Konor, you know, for example. I just picked one that had a name, or, you know, or whatever. They all have a name. So let's just say, all right, so you're Guillemin's Butthole, chapter, and they are from, the planet Sphincter, but they have a, you know, they got this armor, but it's not the armor of Konor. In your counts as army, it's the armor of Sphincter Muscle. But it counted as the same thing. You know, you just did a different name so that you had your own lore to it or whatever. That's not an option anymore. You can't do that. You can spend the 1 CP so that you can basically, you know, your Guillemin's Butthole guys can borrow the armor of Konor from Guillemin temporarily and be happy with it. But that's it. You just get the one relic. That's it. You can only have one relic from the Relics of McCrag. Nothing more. Now, looking at it here, let me to finish that point first before I move on here. Whereas before this codex, you could have keyword Guillemin's Butthole, and that counts as keyword Ultramarines for the, you know, purposes of chapter tactics, relic access, warlord trait access, etc. But that's no longer the case. This is an official ruling that basically, there is no counts as armies anymore in the case of Space Marines. Now, mind you, in most casual settings and even most competitive tournament settings, nobody's going to give a flying fuck. You can roll in with Guillemin's buttholes, and they'll be like, cool, sounds like a plan. Weird army choice, but sure. They're Ultramarines, gotcha. And you get access to all the Ultramarine shit, and you don't have to spend the weird fucking stratagem to get access to your relics and so on and so forth. Most people are not going to give a flying fuck, because a lot of people don't even have their shit painted at all. You know, they're just going to be, you know, the gray plastic warriors. And they're, you know, an Ultramarines counts as army. But yeah, it's the days of counts as are basically done for this purpose. Now, this personally concerns me just because, like, for example, I have my army of Admech. I have Belisarius Call in my current list. So I am following all the rules to do so. They are going to be, the detachment that he's a part of is a Mars detachment. And therefore, boom. It counts as Mars, even though I'm running it as my own Forge World choice, you know, that's painted differently and everything, but they count as Mars for rules purposes. Now, I do like the idea of having an official ruling system for how all these counts as armies and stuff should work. But I find it fascinating that they're legitimately restricted you on, well, you didn't paint them as Ultramarines, you're not calling them Ultramarines, so they're not Ultramarines. They are inheritors of the Primarch Ultramarines. They are Guillemin's butthole, you know, and that's it. So if you run them as Guillemin's butthole, you get access to the... You would have Codex Discipline, but once again, there's that big question with that one stratagem there too. So you would get that Warlord traits. If your Warlord's a character model from an Ultramarine Successor chapter, you can use the Ultramarine's Warlord traits table, and you replace the Ultramarine's keyword in all instances in that Warlord trait, if any, with your Warlord's chapter keyword. So you now have, for example. Master strategy. It would be once per battle. If this warlord is on the battlefield, you could select one friendly Guillemin's butthole unit within 6 inches of this warlord until the end of the battle round when a model in that unit makes an attack. The tactical doctrine is considered to be active. You know, so boom. Okay, makes sense. And then, yeah, the chapter relics. Your successor chapters have access to the special issue war gear, but relics of McCrag cannot be given to a character model unless you use the Honored by McCrag stratagem. I think that's pretty crazy. Stratagems. All units from Ultramarine Successor Chapters are considered to have the Ultramarine's keyword for the purposes of using those stratagems. But then that once again brings up that weird thing with the fallback and re-engage. Why would they not have Codex Discipline if they are an Ultramarine Successor Chapter? Psychic powers. They can know psychic powers from the Indomitus Principle. Or Principle. Bleh. Discipline. Wow. I completely forgot how to read. I are smart. In the same manner as librarian models and Ultramarines attachments. Once again, replace all the keywords. Overall, if you're running a successor chapter, there's a whole slew of rules that's just replace your keywords. It's not saying you get to count as anymore. It's saying you replace the keyword, but the keyword counts as this. Except for the purposes of the relic thing. So I find that pretty goddamn fascinating and crazy. And personally, it does worry me a little bit. Because, like, personally, I've been really wanting to do I've mentioned this in several episodes of this show. I've really been wanting to do a Carcharodon's chapter army. Now, they do not have a definitive lineage. In the lore. However, it's alleged, and there's a lot of hints and stuff, that they're probably, from the Raven Guard, that they would be a successor chapter of Raven Guard. But there's still nothing definitive that says, yes, these guys are indeed a successor chapter of the Raven Guard. So, that makes it a little bit more iffy. But they even mention in the rules, in Codex Space Marines, if you are building a successor chapter, and that successor chapter has a known lineage in the lore, you have to use them as inheritors of the Primarch. They have to follow that chapter. So, which I find really crazy that they are telling you, hey, you painted these guys up like this, so you have to use these rules. You have to. So in the case of Carcharodons, once again, it's an alleged lineage. So, you know, if you let's say you were going to a tournament where someone was going to be really, you know, dickheaded about the rules. And hey, you know what? That's fine. That's their prerogative. And, you know, the rules are rules for a reason. That's why we have these rules, so we can play the game the way it's intended to be played. All right, sounds good. But now if somebody really wanted to be a prick, they might say, okay, well, you know, in the lore, Carcharodons are alleged to be Raven Guard, so you must run them as successor Raven Guard. I would argue, well, it's alleged. It's not proven. It's not stated with fact. It's just, you know, supposed. But there's enough stuff there to say, yeah, it's a pretty safe bet. It's not just, you know, blowing smoke up someone's ass. They are probably Raven Guard. So, if I want to build Carcharodons, gotta run them as Raven Guard. Alright, fine. But that also means, alright, so I'm running them as Raven Guard. I've got, you know, now I've got to use Raven Guard Warlord traits and so on and so forth. But I'm assuming that just like Codex Ultramarines there's going to be special issue war gear and the, you know, fancy dancy relics thing. And those relics are probably not going to let you, you know, have access to that shit unless you are running specifically those, you know, those assholes, that, you know, the Raven Guard in the first place. Or you use some fancy, dumbass little, you know, relic thing to give you access to that. Yeah, I even just double-checked the White Scars Codex has the same thing, Gift of the Khans. So yeah, it's a pretty safe bet that the Raven Guard are going to have a similar stratagem. So, you know, if let's say the Raven Guard have some fancy bolt gun that's, you know, I don't know, like, you know, the Raven's breath shooty bobber, you know. Well, if I want to do Carcharodons, I couldn't just make it the shark's breath shooty bobber and be fine with that, you know, because that's what you used to be able to do. You know, you used to be able to say, yep, these guys, they count as this chapter, so they have access to their stuff. And if you really wanted to dig down into the lore, then you could be like, yeah, so I am using this relic. Oh, well, that's an Ultramarine's relic. Are you sure you can use that? Because you're not an Ultramarine. Well, I'm counting as Ultramarines. But yeah, it's just, I changed the name of the thing. It follows the same rules and everything. Because that's the one thing I thought about doing with Belisarius Call there. Make him my warlord. But I'm not from Mars. So, you know, he could be Kelisarius Ball. You know, just as a stupid example. Follows the same rules and everything else. He's just a different dude. Whatever. As long as the model is accurate, as long as the model is well represented, as long as you're following all the rules to a T as far as the way they function and stuff, you're not putting, you know, Ultramarines characters into a Raven Guard detachment, etc., then by all means, go for it. That should be fine. But we now have official rules that say that none of that's fine. You know, once again, casual setting or even most tournament settings and stuff, if anything, actually, you might have more problems in a casual setting where if you're doing like a narrative league or something like that, a narrative campaign, that's where you might run into more problems with people being like, nope, you picked this chapter, so you gotta go ahead and be the successor to those dudes, okay? That's, I don't know, it's weird. I like it and I hate it at the same time. Because I like the idea of creating an official ruling setup system to add more lore flavor to the game. And also, I really love a lot of the stuff they've done to reward going mono faction. But I also just think this is just bizarre. You know, I don't know what Games Workshop has to gain from it, I guess, is the biggest thing in the long run. What are they gaining? You know, oh, well, if you want to run Ultramarines, you're going to have to buy a whole lot of blue and gold paint. Okay, well, they're going to have to buy a whole lot of fucking paint either way, you know? And it's not necessarily that they're going to buy your gold and blue paint, you know? They could buy Vallejo or whatever else they fucking want and paint it up as long as it looks blue and gold or yellow or whatever you want to go with for that your particular brand and version, then fuck it, you know? So it's just weird. Like I said, I like a lot of the things they're doing with the Codex Space Marines, but I also feel like some of this stuff has been made far too complicated, way more complicated than it has to be, and also has provided some weird, you know, provided a weird de-incentive, I guess, or disincentive to going outside of, you know, the norms, to going outside of being an Ultramarine and painting them as Ultramarines. So it feels like it's almost kind of telling you to hobby less, be less creative. That being said, the one thing I can see now that I'm thinking about it is that if you have gray plastic on the battlefield, they don't get to count as anybody, you know, or they can be an inheritor. But that's it. They don't get to count. They don't get to actually be Ultramarines and have access to the relics and so on and so forth. You know, they are not painted like Ultramarines. So I guess that does to some degree incentivize you to still paint them, but it disincentivizes you to get creative with your painting. So, but yeah, so long-winded statement there on Heritage of the Primarch, but admittedly that was like the primary thing I wanted to kind of cover a little bit. Now, as far as beyond that goes, I did want to cover a few points of importance, namely with the FAQ. The big thing was when the Codex first dropped, we had this whole drop pod thing where you could now ignore tactical reserves, you know, completely. And that meant that you could drop in on turn one, you could drop in on turn two, three, four, five, six. It didn't fucking matter. You could just drop in whenever. They have altered that. It does ignore tactical reserves. However, you do still have to be dropped into the field by the end of the third battle round. Otherwise, you count as being destroyed. So that I'm glad they pulled that back a little bit. But that being said, once again, there's not a whole lot of incentive to play non-Primaris stuff at this point. The non-Primaris stuff just isn't as powerful and capable like Tactical Marines and whatnot. However, characters still have their place and stuff. Smash Captains and all that good jazz. So there is that. But yeah, at the same time, once again, while they did with this Codex bring us some new toys for the Primaris, flesh them out a little bit more, added in a transport, etc., they also still are missing some big key points. Lack of bike access of any variety, which is really bizarre with the White Scars, because that's like a huge part of their lore. But even their, you know, big dude, Corsaro Khan, no longer has a bike. You know, he's just footing it like everybody else. Which seems like a really weird choice and a really weird step away from established lore and what's kind of separates the White Scars from everybody else. So, you would think that this would have been a perfect opportunity for them to introduce bikes, and they didn't. Another thing that they missed out on, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, dedicated assault Primaris. Now, with the whole shock assault rule and combat doctrines and all that shit, they've definitely given us some good shit for assaulting the enemy, even with just regular ass dudes. You know, that even your, you know, basic Primaris Marine is going to be pretty fucking killer in close combat compared to what they were. But they still overall are, they do not have any dedicated hardcore assault units. So my hope is that with these Codex supplements, I had hoped that maybe we would see some new units and whatnot, some new models being added in beyond just characters to maybe add some extra flavor. And I mean, once Psychic Awakening is out, maybe we will. Maybe we will indeed see, you know, Assault Primaris and stuff like that. But as of right now, no, they don't. So, now, a very important distinction here, too, in the FAQ, and I say that with every ounce of dripping sarcasm I can come up with, there was a question in here. Can I use a stratagem from the 2017 edition of Codex Space Marines if there is not an updated version of that stratagem in the 2019 edition of Codex Space Marines? My fucking God. Seriously. This is no. Just fucking no. I can't even believe that this was asked. You know, like, this is just fucking stupid. I mean, these FAQs, they these questions are because somebody asked, you know. The FAQ, frequently asked questions. How can anybody in their right fucking mind think, oh, well, they took this stratagem out, so I guess I'll, you know, have to just keep my old book so I can use that stratagem out of there when I'm running my 2019 army. You know what? If you want access to that stratagem, you don't get access to any of the 2019 shit. You got to play your army just like it was a 2017 army. You know, you get to play it with the old rules. The whole thing. I'll let you do that. That's fine. I'll play against somebody and let you go ahead and roll with the shitty Space Marines. That's fine. You know what? More power to you. You don't want to win the game? That's cool. But to basically ask, the question basically boils down to, can I cherry pick the bullshit I like and fuck the rest? No. You gotta be completely off your fucking rocker, you fucking moron. So, like, holy fuck. I don't know what possessed you to think that that was a worthwhile question. So, now, what is also an interesting note here, they did specify, you know, once again, as I mentioned before, in order to get access to the combat doctrines, you must not only be mono, like, faction, but you must actually be mono chapter as well. You can't have a detachment of Ultramarines, a detachment of Raven Guard, and a detachment of Imperial Fists to get access to combat doctrines. The whole army, the whole kit caboodle needs to be one thing, which I love the shit out of. I am so looking forward to future Codexes. And this kind of goes back to why I think that Codex Chaos Space Marines, they need to throw away the 2.0 and do a 3.0 at this point. They really should. I feel like that was a complete fuck up on their part, basically, to put out that 2.0 codex and then put out this thing. Not because I feel like it's a weak codex, but because of the fact that I feel like this is the direction the game should be moving. We should be, you know, I mean, this was what they said they were going to do all forever ago, before 8th edition was out, when they first announced it. They were like, hey, you know what we're really going to drive for? We're not going to take away your allies and all that shit, but we're going to give you a good goddamn reason to run mono faction. And they fucking didn't. Like, every single army was, any army that had no ally options was worse off than anybody that did. And anybody who played mono faction was basically playing on hard mode, you know? So, instead, now they're like, okay, well, you can still ally your Space Marines, but if you go pure mono faction and And on top of that, you go pure single chapter, you get access to bonus shit. You know? And if you're going, you know, pure single chapter, and you have the supplement, you can go towards that shit even too. You know? You can go ahead and be like, yeah, no, these guys are Ultramarines, so I get access to all this shit in Codex Space Marines, and all this shit in the Codex supplement, and I got the combat doctrines, and so on and so forth. There is a very distinct, legitimate reason to build a whole army out of one faction and one chapter. Because that's one thing that kind of bothers me sometimes is, like, you know, picking out, you know, you know, min-maxing, basically, your army, tweaking it out where you've got, you know, even if you're running mono-faction, you still got one detachment that's one thing and one that's another, and you specifically pick out which units go into which detachment to maximize all the access to special traits and shit. Fuck that. I think that people should totally be able to do that if they want, but you should incentivize a good reason not to. And that's exactly what they did with the whole combat doctrines thing. So, taking it back a step there, Chaos Space Marines 2.0 was a fuck up. Now that we have the Space Marines Codex, the 2.0, you know, Codex Space Marines, and we have rules that super incentivize mono faction, mono chapter, totally should have done that with Chaos Space Marines. And I think they should do it with all books here, you know, henceforth. Now, some armies can only be run mono faction, you know, Tau and Orcs and Necrom. They don't have allied options. So, realistically, they don't need to necessarily be given a special rule that says, hey, if you run mono faction, you'll get access to this shit. They already have access to that shit because they're mono faction by default. But they should bring them up on par, power-wise, with the armies that have the option for mono faction that gives them an oomph. So, you know, that, you know, it doesn't have to be the same exact thing, like combat doctrines or, you know, shit like that, but I would say it should be something roughly equivalent in overall, you know, change to the feel and playstyle of the army. Overall, the new Codex and the supplement certainly seem to offer a lot of good signs of what I'm hoping we get to look forward to for future Codex releases, you know. I'm hoping that through Psychic Awakening, we will see maybe some of those things I mentioned with the Primaris stuff, a couple of those gaps filled in here and there. I'm hoping that with any future 2.0 codexes that we're going to see some similar structure as far as giving you reasons to mono build. And it'd be nice to see some of those, you know, I love what they're, you know, a lot of people might bitch and moan, it's just a money grab, blah, blah, blah. But I actually kind of like the fact that they are deep diving further on these specific chapters and really giving them a whole workover to really separate them flavor-wise, just to basically give, you know, multiple build styles and play styles from one faction. I think that's fantastic. I'm hoping we will see similar things. You know, it'd be awesome to, you know, see if the Astra Militarum 2.0 comes out at some point, to see like a Codex Cadia and a Codex Catachan and so on and so forth, like supplement-wise, not like a full-blown Codex, but, you know, do the main Codex, do some of these supplementary ones, and, you know, call that a day. Although, on that note, personally, I think we need to get rid of Codex Cadia as an idea anyways, because Cadia doesn't exist anymore, and at some point, all the Cadians are going to be dead. And that'll be that. There will never be more Cadians anyway. So I think they need to be replaced with some new, you know, primary, guard faction or something. But that's neither here nor there. That's just me and, my thinking. So, but yeah, overall, like I said, I think this is a great Codex. I'm going to keep tinkering around with it a little more. Might even kind of dig in a little bit more in coming episodes on more specifics. I just kind of wanted to touch on those couple points of weird note and stuff in the book, as well as, you know, a couple of those fun little FAQ notes. So, but I think we're going to call that a call here at this point. We'll, you know, pick it up next week. Like I said, might go a little bit more into the Space Marine stuff. Well, we'll see. It depends on kind of what news and excitement we get over the coming week. So, but, as always, you know, hit me up on Facebook, facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast. Follow me on Twitter @RegimentalVox. And you can, hit up the Patreon page, patreon.com/theRegimentalVox. And, you know, donate today. Every little bit helps. You know, that would definitely help me expand this out. And as always, too, you know, outside of following the Facebook page, share the Facebook page. Invite friends to it. Share the podcast with people you know. My cat is currently sitting on my desk eating paper. That's a random note, but come on, get out of here. Good Lord, cat. Anywho. Thank you guys for listening. I will catch you all next week. This is Caleb Meyer signing out for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.